world of mental health, exploring all things related to daily living. Your hosts, Benny Massey, LPCC, and Earl J. Bell, LCSW.
And we want to say welcome to all the listeners out there. This is an episode of On the Couch. I am Earl Bell.
And I am Benny Massey, and you are on the couch.
Today we are going to look at a different type of intervention utilized by many therapists throughout the world. It's a person-centered therapy, and some of you may have heard of it, but not quite understand person-centered therapy. So we want to take this opportunity to kind of maybe lay the groundwork so that if you're listening and you are looking for a therapist, you can maybe, if this sounds like something that would benefit you, look for a therapist who practices client-centered therapy. We also want to encourage you to call in today. Our phone number is
917-889-3093.
When you call in, you will be placed on hold. You'll be able to listen to the show through your telephone, and we will pull you up and call for you to speak out. And just give us your first name and then either ask a question or give us a comment. But we really look forward to hearing from our listeners because this has been very popular with several people and we want to keep the popularity going. So, Benny, would you like to get started? What are we going to talk about today about client-centered therapy?
Well, and we initially started out calling this person-centered therapy. It's been known by both person-centered and client-centered therapy. And I practice client-centered therapy. And the technique pretty much is the focus is on the client. We allow the client to come in and present. We don't try to steer the client in any sort of direction. We try to allow them to speak and speak their truth and support them through that.
And I think it's important also to mention that client-centered therapy was developed back in the 40s and 50s, and it's more of a personal or more of a personal response to therapy and less clinical is the way I think that I would look at it, because at that time, everybody was into Freudian type therapy and different types of interventions that were more clinical. And is it safe to say that this therapy focuses more on the individual, more so than the actual diagnosis or the clinical aspect of what makes up the client?
I would absolutely agree with that. Yes.
Okay, cool. And I think one thing that you might be able to speak to is the whole unconditional positive regard. There are several key qualities of person-centered therapy, but I've always been drawn back to the unconditional positive regard, as it's called in person-centered therapy. What is your perspective on unconditional positive regard in person-centered therapy?
Unconditional positive regard to me is simply not shunning the client for whatever he or she says, listening, being present, being in the moment with the client, and bonding with the client in that you're not showing surprise or dismay in what they're saying. You're just going through the motions and listening and supporting them through what they're saying.
So if the client comes in and says something totally bizarre and off the wall, it's important for you as a person-centered therapist not to respond in shock or awe, but to understand that, you know, it's irrelevant what that client is going through and your personal feelings of how bizarro it may be or odd is irrelevant, because as a person-centered therapist, you're going to focus more on the client regardless of what the client is going through. Is that safe to say?
I would agree with that. I would maybe take question or offense, not offense, but I would question the bizarro piece that you said, because I believe as they're continuing to express and plead their case or say their piece, it's up to the therapist to find that rationale and try to gain more insight in what they're saying. So, yes, it's important not to frighten them by your nonverbal and, like you said, the shock and awe, and just stick with them and listen to them. And if you have questions, maybe a query, but let them continue to go and gain insight through that.
And the questions as well should be asked in a non-challenging, non-confrontational style, to where that if your personal thoughts are about what the behavior of the client is discussing is kind of bizarre and abnormal, that your questions don't shun or shame or make the client feel less of a person than he did when or she when they came in to see you. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I agree with that.
Okay. What are some other key qualities of the person-centered therapist so that our listeners will know what to look for as they start digging into person-centered therapy and looking for a therapist to help them?
One of the big ones is genuineness. That's how it's described in the literature, but it's being real. I would call it being real, being genuine, being comfortable, just taking it in, but not presenting as if you're acting or if you're hiding your dismay, but just so keeping it real. If you have questions, if you're somewhat lost in what they're saying, query and ask them further questions to clarify, but try it by all means to keep it real and stay with them throughout.
And I guess this is also using this skill would also help with an open relationship with the client, between the client and the therapist. Okay, cool.
And that's one of the imperative things with person-centered is to bond and connect. It's about the relationship. So that helps in the bonding process.
Yeah, and I guess also you're modeling good communication skills and appropriate communication skills.
Absolutely.
When you're open with the client. And hopefully that's something the client can, as you say, bond with the therapist. But it's also a skill that hopefully the client can take with them is, my therapist, he was open and he was able to communicate. I'm going to take some of those skills that I saw in my therapist and use them in my daily life.
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome.
Another one is another one of the skills that we use in person-centered is being empathetic or empathetic understanding. And it's, again, empathy means putting yourself in someone else's shoes, trying to understand and be present with them, but also have that visual or that experience that they had or that they speak of. So it's important to be able, when you can, empathize, to use that skill.
And also, to put it in simple terms as well, to build on what you said, it's also for the therapist to be able to understand the thoughts and feelings of the client who's coming to them, and not to necessarily kind of get stuck on what the client is going through as being something totally different or something out there that you have no understanding of. It's important for the therapist to, again, as you put it, show empathy toward the client.
So, I agree. Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah. And also, I think there are several other characteristics of person-centered therapy. And this is one thing in the clinical world you'll hear quite a bit, and maybe some of the listeners have heard it as well. A lot of times when you go to the doctor, for an example, you break your arm or you have the cold or the flu, you go to your doctor and you're considered a patient, you know. And one thing with person-centered therapy, it doesn't use the term patient. The big term that they use is client rather than patient, because the term patient kind of, as we talked earlier, puts the doctor, the therapist, or whoever on a higher level than the client. Or when you call them a client, it kind of lowers the therapist down on more of an equal level.
Absolutely. It takes that hierarchy away, or that higher level. And this is another key component to person-centered therapy. You want, of course, the client is coming to you as a professional for help and support, so they realize you are the trained individual. However, once they enter the office or the setting of a person-centered therapist, it's important to make them feel like there's a relationship, like there's a connection, and not not focus on you're the doctor, you're the professional, but we're in this together. We're going to work through this together.
And that togetherness also allows for the client to understand that the therapist isn't going to tell them you're wrong or you can't have those feelings, you can't have those thoughts, because I'm the therapist and that's the way it has to be. That's not how person-centered therapy works. Person-centered therapy kind of goes with the client, as you said earlier, and meets them where they are to move forward without judgment of the client or the client's thoughts or beliefs.
Absolutely.
So can you tell me, as you move through client-centered therapy, there are different goals of client-centered therapy that just kind of speak in general terms about the client, the therapist, and what's expected from the person-centered therapist and the client who's attending the person-centered therapy. Can you kind of give us an idea of some of the goals in general?
One of the things that we want to, that I work on specifically, is increasing their self-worth or their self-esteem and trying to empower them to see that they have the answers, that so through exploring, through querying, through just being there in the moment and listening and encouraging them to express themselves more, we can point out the strengths. And it's very important for them to realize the strengths that they have. So we want to definitely increase that self-worth and empower them where we can.
Yeah, and can you also speak a little bit to, I know that when a therapist sees a client, the first session, the therapist will ask several questions, getting the history of the client. And then as the session goes on, the client will also, or the therapist will also, set the goals and objectives for the therapist. However, I believe, and you can speak to this a little more, in client-centered therapy, the therapist doesn't really set the goals for the client, because if he did or she did, that would make the therapist the expert. And so they allow the client to identify the goals of what they would like to work on.
This is very important too. I agree. And what we want is what they want. So we want to know where they want to go, and we kind of explore to help them develop that, where they want to go and how they're going to get there. But ultimately, they're driving the car. We're a rider in the car, and we're experiencing it with them, but we're supporting and helping them through this transition, through this journey.
And I think also, and I like your analogy of driving the car, the client's driving the car, and as a person-centered therapist, we're the passenger. But I do think there will be some times with some clients when the car starts to go off the road, and you kind of have to pull them back. And I think when that happens, there has to be some type of communication, again, between the therapist and the client to kind of explore what was it that, since we're talking about cars, drove the client to gear off the road. And then that allows the client to express what's going on, what they're feeling, and what they're thinking. And the therapist can then, without judgment, explore those with the client and kind of go from there.
That also empowers them. It empowers them substantially when they're able to tell you what occurred and how we ended up where we ended up and how to get back on track. So those the questioning, the line of questions are important, but also the non-judgmental piece is so important, because who hasn't went off the road?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You're right. Not only metaphorically speaking, but actually in real life, I've been off the road several times. And I always feel like, and we'll use that as an example, when I drive the car off the road, I need someone there to kind of pull me back onto the road and give me a little bit of a push to get headed down the road again. And that's kind of a great metaphor to use with person-centered therapy, because I'm going to be the one driving the car when I get back on the road. And the thing that I like about the person-centered therapy approach as well is, when the client gets back on track, they have to be on track themselves, the way that they view being on track, as we put it. Because if the therapist comes in and tells the client what they're supposed to do and what being on the right track looks like, that's not going to work with the client, because the client is not invested in it, because it's some other person telling them what they're supposed to do and how it's supposed to go. So, yeah, totally. But I do think sometimes you may have to nudge them back onto the road.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
Okay, great. And there are different conditions for person-centered therapy. And I think that's something that Carl Rogers laid out. And his basic thought was these are some things that are definitely required for person-centered therapy to be successful and work. You know, and I know that one of them is that the word incongruence, okay? Because I know Carl Rogers used that quite a bit.
Yes, he did. And incongruency is being off track and having things spread out, and it's trying to put it all back together as a whole and figuring out how did we get here. So congruency is something that we want to achieve. And again, the questioning, the support, the being present and being in the moment with them and being genuine is key to regaining congruency.
And so congruency can also come from what you're saying. It can come from like a difference between the ideal self of what the client wants and the client's image of what they are at this point. That's what kind of drives incongruency. Okay, great. Yeah. And as far as the other conditions, one we've already spoken of, the unconditional and positive regard from the client, or from the counselor, I'm sorry, the therapist, toward the client.
One of the other things, yes, that's important. And one of the other things is a lot of therapy techniques shun against self-disclosure.
And of the therapist.
Of the therapist, yes. They don't want, because it is, and even in this technique or this therapeutic intervention, the focus should be on the client. However, there are times where Carl Rogers, the founder or the person who developed this technique, would self-disclose and chime in and give his own personal experiences or opinions. And this is okay using person-centered therapy as long as you don't make, or as long as the therapist doesn't make the discussion or the session about themselves. It should always stay focused on the client.
And I guess one thing about self-disclosure along that line would be if a client comes to you with a recent death or someone passing away, it would be appropriate and okay for the therapist to say, wow, you know, my mom, dad, whoever just passed away last month. And that also allows for the therapist to engage in some empathetic interactions with the client as well.
Absolutely.
That way the client understands, wow, this guy's been through what I've been through. And again, that also, in a way, normalizes what the client is feeling because they can look and see that someone else is going through what they're going through, and it's a normal response to whatever that trigger may be.
Other than themselves.
Yeah.
You have to be careful, the therapist, when using self-disclosure. Again, you don't want to make it about yourself, but those moments where you can chime in and bond or connect are very powerful and very helpful to the client.
And so, like, if the therapist comes in to meet with the client and starts talking about the wild weekend that they had, or, you know, something that's totally off base or not even related to what the client is seeking, that would be self-disclosure that's totally inappropriate.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. So, yeah. And I guess my question also is, one of the techniques that's really effective, and we've spoken about it, I'm going to go back to it because I think it's really important, is that you have to listen non-judgmentally. And basically, if you can do that, that's one of the most important aspects of client-centered therapy. Because I think, and again, this goes back to how some therapists will rely on different techniques and they have to lay them out for the client to follow,
mm-hmm,
instead of focusing on what the client is really looking, mm-hmm, for themselves. And at that point, it becomes more about the therapist feeling like they have to follow the techniques, mm-hmm, instead of worrying about what's going on with the client.
Non-judgmental, being non-judgmental, I would say is imperative. Our clients come to us at a vulnerable state, and They're coming to us to express themselves, to tell us their truth, and it's important for us to be able to listen and be there with them. And I'm not saying that whatever they say, whatever comes out of their mouth might not jar you a bit. However, it's important for us to try not to judge and try to be there with them through that moment, because if we show any signs of discomfort, it can mess up the entire session.
I think one thing that's important as well is, you know, setting appropriate boundaries with the client, because, Benny, it's like you say, these clients are vulnerable. A lot of them are. And unfortunately, that opens up, you know, the whole line that, you know, as someone who's vulnerable, if the therapist doesn't have appropriate boundaries and set appropriate boundaries, there can be a dependency that sets up. So I think the important thing is from the start, you kind of set boundaries, but then as time goes on, you may have to set different boundaries and pull some in.
Boundaries are very much needed, and they can get blurred because in this type of therapeutic intervention, it's non-conventional to some extent. So you want to make sure the boundaries are clear. You want to make sure the boundaries are firm, and you want to make sure you represent that to the client. And it's from the beginning. You don't want to do it too late. You want to do it as soon as possible.
And I think working with the client as far as person-centered therapy, you can almost look at yourself as more of a sounding board and listening to what the client is saying, but not just listening, taking an active listening role in what the client is saying. And that allows for you to even repeat back to them what the client said, but use your own words to make sure that you are totally understanding what the client is looking for. Because if the client comes in and starts telling you about, you know, a recent death and they're going through how they feel, then you jump to something totally separate from that, then you're not really listening to what the client wants and what the client is saying.
Repeating back or summarizing is a very powerful tool that we use in person-centered therapy. It allows the client to know that we're with them and that we heard them and that we understand. And so if you, anytime you can, summarize or not repeat, but rephrase and give them a sense that you're with them, it empowers the session and it empowers the client.
Okay. Can you tell me though, Benny, what do you do if, you know, when a client comes in and a lot of times, and you've seen this, they're uncomfortable opening up or they'll have trouble, you know, seeing what's going on just below the surface. How do you work with them and how do you let them know that you're on board for the long haul?
I would support them in letting them know that this has to be a difficult situation for them to come in and spill their feelings and thoughts to someone they don't know. But I would reiterate, I'm not here to judge you. That's not my job. I'm here to help you deal with what you're coming in with, help you explore the options, and we're in this together. So I would try to help them feel more comfortable in the setting with myself.
And I think one thing that's really important as a therapist practicing person-centered therapy, if the client comes in, and you'll see this from the early on with the sessions, if they come in and they have feelings of low self-esteem or guilt or believing they're not good enough, it's important not to validate these beliefs for the client, but also let them know that you accept them for who they are and where they are, and you're not going to reject them because they have these thoughts and feelings, because these thoughts and feelings for them at this moment in their life are real and true to them. And I think that's where, you know, the whole accepting what they say and then letting them know that you don't agree with what they say, not to validate those thoughts and feelings, but to say, okay, that's where you are. We can work with that.
Well, the reality is we're all human and we all come with different thoughts and feelings and we all have different experiences, but there's some connection and similarity if we don't put our judgment hats on, and we're not there to, I would say, persecute in so many ways. We're there to listen and to let them know we're here to support, and we're there to help you get through this, because we all come in with different experiences and thoughts and feelings.
And those thoughts and feelings, you know, like a client might come in with, you know, being real negative and, you know, not really, you know, saying what you want to hear, what you feel like they should be saying, where you think they should be. It's important to, again, accept those negative thoughts and feelings that the client's expressing, and don't take it personally. They might come in and say, well, last week when I left here, I didn't feel like anything had changed. And I think that's important to also understand that that can be explored as well.
That's, you know, their true. That's their true. And if my job as the therapist is to acknowledge that that's their truth and explore how we can get to a better resolution, and what I can do if they don't feel that I'm being supportive, if I can do anything at the time to help them get back on track. But I cannot denounce their truth, and I cannot shun their truth. I need to accept it.
Accept it for that's how they feel. Exactly, totally. And I think one thing that's really important is, you know, and I'm sure people have always heard this, it's not so much what you say, but how you say it. I think the tone of voice that the therapist uses with the client is very important, not only in person-centered therapy, but in any therapeutic intervention, because if you start sounding angry toward the client when they're bringing up some of the issues that they're dealing with, then that's going to shut the client down as well. And that's why you need to kind of speak in even tones that are not too judgmental. And I think that's something that's really important to keep going back to, is the non-judgmental part of the person-centered therapy.
I agree. They're coming in at a vulnerable state. They're trusting that we are the ones to lead them out of that state. But they come in to find out that they're going to be the drivers of that car.
And I think that's really important when you said they're coming in for us to help them get out of this state. We're not going to get them out of this state. We can only help them and, as you say, let them drive the car.
And ride with them.
And ride with them. And I think the thing also to take from all this is the fact that this is one therapeutic intervention that's available out there. And it's important to do some research before you find a therapist and go in, so that you feel like your needs are getting met. Because if you go to someone who's not going to work with you on what you are feeling or thinking or the emotions that you're experiencing, then you may not get the help that you need to move on from the issues that are bothering you.
I agree. And in the future, we will be covering other different types of techniques and therapeutic interventions. We chose person-centered today. That's the technique that I choose to use. But there are several different techniques, and therapists adopt all different kinds. So we're just wanting to give you, the listener, the opportunity to hear about these different therapeutic interventions and choose the best one for you.
And make the choice that best suits you and best benefits you, as opposed to what is best for the therapist. It's important. Sometimes you may go sit down with a therapist, and this is something I tell clients when they come to see me. When the client comes in, after two or three sessions, I always tell the client, if you're not comfortable after two or three sessions, let me know, because we can find you another therapist. And that's the thing that's really most important, is making sure the client is comfortable in the session, not so much the therapist. And I think person-centered therapy, if practiced appropriately, does help allow the client to feel a little more comfortable with the therapist and then the session.
Absolutely. And we're coming to an end of this program, and we want to thank you all for listening. We appreciate you tuning in every Monday at 8 p.m. We will continue to be here every Monday at 8 p.m. We encourage you to call us at 917-889-3093. We look forward to your calls and questions.
And if you'd like, you can email us at listentoonthecouch@gmail.com. And we will respond to all of our emails. We get several, So it might take us a few days, but we will get back with you. And hopefully we'll hear you next week, or you'll be hearing us next week at 8 p.m.
Thank you so much.